Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob R8XFT.
T Pangolin.
Jan Boruta.
Alpha Shard.
We all know how fun UI elements are to code.
Yeah. Very much so.
They were sarcastic, guys, by the way. Don't let my dead man deceive you.
Welcome to Modcast 61 with me, Rob R8XFT.
Jan Boruta.
T Pangolin.
Alpha Shard.
And Gazebo.
Well, we have a full house in today, including our special guest, Gazebo, who will be calling Jeff. That's his real name out there in the real world.
It's an interesting story. We were doing trivia at my university's bar, and I had our team name as Canifest Destiny, and someone actually recognized it from the Civ Battle Royale, which was one of the most surreal things that's ever happened.
It's always weird when internet life seeps into the real life.
Oh,
it's eerie. It's strange.
Yeah.
Similar to when I had students and I was teaching, and I'd go to the store, and I'd see a student, and they would just stare at me like a deer in headlights. They'd just look at me like I was this, like, you're not supposed to be here. You're supposed to be in the classroom. You're this thing that only exists there. And so it's like that. It's like bleeding over into the real world.
Hearing your internet name being read out by other people on YouTube is very strange. Like when they say, oh, this is mod by T Pangolin or something, and they just horribly butcher it or mispronounce the name, and it's just so surreal. It's kind of like, you know, you're a kid again and you're called out in a school assembly and you don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but hearing your name just makes you feel weird.
Yeah, it is. It's exciting though. Like the first time you hear your name or see one of your projects independent of you, like you had no interaction with this person, you were like, hey, try this or do this, and they pick it up on their own and they do it. It is very exciting, but yeah, it definitely has that uncanny feeling.
Yeah,
too.
It's like I remember watching this YouTube video or something, and this is for the Battle Royale, the first iteration of it. Very, very enthused woman, I don't know who it is, but the way she pronounced my name was just like, and this Civilization Battle Royale is recorded all by one dude called T-Pang. And I'm just like, my friends in real life just don't let me live that down. It's just the most horrible, horrible thing. Now, officially, that one dude called T-Pang.
We need to get her on to introduce Modcast.
Oh, no.
Jeff's on to talk about the community patch project. Just to start off then, how did that all come about?
Well, that's a good question. I started working on my first mod, City-State Diplomacy, back in the first year that Civ came out, because I really hated the way that they handled city-state gifting. The citizen gold around the world instantly. The ancient era really bugged me. And I had no idea what I was doing. This is my first mod. I was completely new to the concept, so I dove in, started figuring things out. And over time, I needed more and more things, until I finally ran into William Howard, W. Howard 69. He helped me with some DLL stuff, and then I started getting interested, and I had some experience with it, but not much, and so I started diving into that, and one thing led to another, and I found myself wanting to just fix a lot of the nagging AI issues and a lot of the nagging bugs that were left over from the last Brave New World patch. So I started working on that, and people just started coming into the project, and so it went from being just me to a team of at least two people that are involved, occasionally more, depending on how we use art and stuff like that. And so we started working on building a better AI. And then from that came the desire to create a different game experience.
What were the priorities to change?
First off, it was to fix a lot of the more nagging bugs. When you're dealing with modding and you're looking at the way they've set up the XML for Civ, you can see layers of how this game was built and then rebuilt in the process. So you have the standard model of the DLL that's very similar to Civ 4's. And then you see additions like culture added in. And in the DLL, they're actually named for John Schaefer. They're called John's culture, John's this, John's that, and they're added in as a completely separate entity. This makes it very difficult to use a yield like faith or culture like any other yield, like food or production or what have you. And so one of the big tasks that I started working on, and then William Howard really focused on, was unifying those yields, making them all one pool so that culture could be put into any table and it would work just like food, just like production. And that was a big
thing.
Does
this also work with tourism now? Because I remember the tourism being really, really fluffy.
Yeah, they should.
Now, when you're saying that John's culture was not compatible with like the other yields, was it because it simply said John's culture, or was there something about the code not as compatible?
Right. So it was both. In the XML, for example, you would see that a building would have a yield of 3 production. So it would have its own table saying this building produces 3 production. And then in the actual basic table for that building, there would be a culture per turn 1. And that would be its own thing. And so it would be independent of the other yield code, which was then handled independently in the DLL. And so it was its own strand of the DLL, this culture code that would run through it. It made it really, really difficult to figure out what yields could be used where.
It gave it an extra process to do, it seems like.
Right.
Okay. Didn't that culture yield change with Gods and Kings? So, if I remember rightly,
it did.
It was included in the base building in XML, this is.
Yeah, they did some changes like that. Like, they fixed a couple of things, but they left a lot of it undone.
Yeah.
What do you think the most glaring omission that the developers at Firaxis made for Civ 5 that the community patch has essentially patched?
That's a good question. I spend a lot of my time dealing with diplomacy because there were a lot of features of diplomacy that the AI had no idea how to use. For example, defensive packs. Humans can offer defensive packs to the AI, and the AI will occasionally accept them, but the AI had no concept of how to send out defensive packs to other AI. And so it was a situation where this was a piece of the game that was exclusively built around the human player, and the AI had no way of understanding its utility or how to use it. And so we focused on teaching them how to use it. It was kind of funny for a while. When I was first tweaking it, they were a little too happy to use it. So the AI would have 6-7 defensive packs a game. Everyone was defending everyone else. So invariably, the first war was just a massive scrum. But we've toned it down since then quite a bit.
Well, it was like World War One or longer.
Exactly, but this was in like 2000 BC, so, you know.
You fixed the Krakatoa spawning location.
Yeah, that was actually fixed by sort of the pseudo-precursor to this mod was Communitas, which was done by Thalassicus. And he had a fix in that, so we just took that, pulled it over, and brought it with us after he stopped modding.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff from third-party mods that you've included and kind of carried on with all the stuff that W. Howard did before, all the little tweaks.
Yes. The DLL was built off of his DLL. We just expanded off of that. So we used his same system for incorporating his smaller mods into it so they would still be compatible with the community patch.
Yeah, on the note of small tweaks and diplomacy, as a person that is oriented on aesthetics primarily, I like that you, for example, unlocked all the diplomacy text that was unused in the base game, like all the multiple dialogue options for friendly. It all makes the AI a bit more talkative and unique in every game when it doesn't repeat all the very same text.
Yeah, there was a lot of unused text, a lot of unused material that we had to figure out where it was going to fit in the code, because a lot of it was marked for events or behaviors that the AI had never been taught to do or that had simply been abandoned in development at some point. So we had to figure out where that goes. One of the other things I worked on a lot was making meaningful impact from the messages that the AI would send to players. So the AI would often insult the player and say, you know, you're a city-state or whatever. And there would be two options. There would be deal with it or sorry. You know, it would be two, like, one's more offensive, one's less offensive. And there was actually no point in the DLL to saying either of those things.
Yeah.
There was no point whatsoever. Mm. Yeah. And so we added in the ability for the insult to actually occasionally bait the AI into war. And so it made it feel more like a diplomatic gaffe that then turns into a conflict rather than just a pointless butt to hit.
Yeah, yeah. I really like that those insults can be either followed by a denouncement or a straight out declaration of war. Although in a few cases, I have to admit that when the AI was insulted back and declared war, I could sign peace with them right away because they didn't mind that as much. So I don't know if it can be helped at all or amended in recent builds.
Yeah, there was a bug that let the AI peace out instantly if you weren't careful, but I think we fixed that now. So I hope. It's one of those things that can test it 1,000 times, but then you release the mod and then there's magnitude of more people looking at it and invariably something's gone awry.
Yeah, definitely.
I also like the map size scaling for free buildings and spies, and I think that was an issue that was never fully fixed. That's a good thing to cover too.
Yeah, the standard map size, a lot of Firaxis decisions made sense. But then you jump up to large, jump up to huge, or even go down to small, and you start to see big problems in the static number of things you would receive, particularly spies, I think is a good example. Like at a standard size, you have enough spies. At large or huge, there are so many city-states and so many other players that the utility of your spies is simply strapped. You can't possibly have enough spies to really interact with the world the way you were at other map sizes. That just wasn't viable, I didn't feel.
How about the issue of not having enough spy names then? Did you exceed the limit of vanilla sieves or add names, and how that would impact mods that don't have, for example, 12 or more spy names?
A couple of users added in a bunch of new spy names for the base sieves from Brave New World and on. And then I want to say, I can't say this exactly, but I'm almost positive that William Howard added in code that if you don't have a spy name, it just randomly pulls from other ones. And I believe that's how it works now.
Yeah, that should work, because I remember a couple of civilizations that didn't have enough spy names, and this caused a hard crash every time a new spy was spawned, because it didn't get a name. On the matter of spies, I really like the small detail of extra passive actions as a hostile spy would cause either to your cities or your spy on other cities, like stealing gold, halting production. Is this still in the base community patch, or was it only moved to the balance patch?
It was moved to the balance patch because if you weren't ready for it and you assumed you were getting a vanilla experience with the community patch, it was jarring for some users. So we moved it to the community balance patch. But it is a fun system. I would love to, if I have time in the future, to go in and make that a bit more user-controlled, so you could set a radio dial and say, I want you to focus on sabotaging production or sabotaging great people. But that may or may not happen because the code is very rough in the espionage.
I assume it would be easier in Beyond Earth because there the spies are a tiny bit more fleshed out.
Yeah, I would love to look at the DLL for how they managed it. If they used the same espionage model as a base level, how they then grafted that system onto it.
Mm-hmm, yeah, but I have to say that I really like those extra passive abilities of spies, and I must say that I prefer the base community patch. Aforementioned vanilla experience, but I really like those spies, so I'm kind of torn right now.
Yeah. One of my goals when the project starts to wind down is I'm going to focus a bit more on making sure that distinct systems like that can be toggled off and on by players, so that even if you're using just the community patch, you can then toggle on this element or that element of the CBP and not have to...
The other option, of course, is to make things more modular. So I say if I agree, because there's a lot of the things with the CBP that I absolutely agree with and I think that are absolutely amazing, but some of them I would rather not have as well.
Yep.
And I do definitely agree with the fact that you should be able and have the ability to toggle things on and off, but it would be interesting to see. I think there would be quite a few people out there that would just want a few, as opposed to having to toggle pretty much absolutely everything on and off. I just want to download one thing and have that work.
Yeah, that's one of those things that I think I would like to do once we get to a more stable point. The key is figuring out an elegant way to do that so that users don't log on, download everything that I have made, install it all at once, and then complain to me that they can't figure out why it works. And I'm like, it's because these two things aren't compatible, as it says in the instructions. Mm-hmm.
Well, they are just so eager to play the game. They don't have the time to read all that crap.
I think it's faster if you tell them.
Well, I will say this, that I do feel lucky that the project has gotten large enough, the community patch project, that we have a couple of users who are on the forum pretty much all the time, and they do a very good job of fielding those initial I need help, I don't know how this works questions. So the amount of times I have to myself go in and say those things over and over again has gone down, thankfully, quite a bit lately.
City state diplomacy. I included it in the very original version of Anno Domini, and I took it out because certainly at the time there were civs that were building up something like thousands of influence with city states because you know, they kept building diplomatic units and just sending them on. I don't know if that's changed since.
It has. Early on in the mod, in city-state diplomacy, I was just borrowing the great merchant logic to have them go to city-states. The problem with that is that the great merchant logic was exclusively, look at the closest city-state. Is it friendly? Okay, go there. And so it was by no means set up to spread influence out. And it was that way for about the first 6 months or so of the mod's existence. And it's that particularly that pushed me to figure out how to make them more intelligent with those units in the DLL. And so I wrote a function for them that would make them behave a bit more intelligently, you know, spread their influence out, try to keep influence with ones they were close to losing. They could beat another player with one trip, do that first, and so on. I mean, you still have issues where if two major civs are competing over the same city-state, that it will get very high, but you don't have situations where one will just simply send their nonstop to one place by himself or herself.
All right, so on the notion of the city-state diplomacy mod, because I'm too lazy to go on the forums, so a personal question. Is it now available just to paste it over the community patch, or is the balance patch needed for it as well?
Since the code for the community patch and city-state diplomacy, it's the same DLL, I've made a couple of small tweaks and improvements to the CSD, to that mod's DLL within the community patch. So it is possible to play just community patch with just CSD. There's a couple of small things you have to do with Lua, with the UI files, but it's not too terribly convoluted. But yeah, you can use just one with the other. For the sake of simplicity with the community patch project as a whole, I've bundled it so that if you want to use Civ 4 diplomacy features, you have to use them all bundled together because I have all the code for them, all the Lua that is merged into one single file for those mods, so it keeps things simple.
So isn't there a version, though, without the DLL?
CSD? Yeah, there is a version of CSD without the DLL. It, however, is based on the code from before I fixed diplomats, so they will behave like great merchants, and they'll just run to the nearest city-state over and over again. So it's not great. You can use it, but I wouldn't recommend it. So it's out there for people that absolutely want XYZ, the features of CSD, but don't care about that at the game.
You mentioned Civ 4 diplomatic features. Did you make any changes to that as well, or is it just as it was done by Potmulk?
There's a lot of great ideas in it, and very well fleshed out on its own. A couple of things, once Brave New World came out, it didn't work with very well. It had some elements that were exactly ideal. So I've been going through, and particularly with vassals, getting vassals to behave a bit more intelligently, getting them to go to war and go to peace at the proper times. I've helped the AI evaluate a bit more clearly when it should vassalize and when it should not, or when it should want to be vassalized in that process. I've also expanded some of the features for why you should want to vassalize. So previously, you had to spend gold because you paid a vassal levy or vassal tax, but you got some culture, and I think you also got some science. And a lot of users felt that wasn't quite enough of a reward for vassalization. One thing I recently added is that if you have a vassal, based on the number of vassals you have, at the beginning of a new era, a collection of military units will appear at your capital as part of a vassal levy, a vassal tribute. So that's something that kind of incentivizes you to go out and make those vassals. And it also benefits the AI as well, if the AI does it.
Nice to hear, because before this mod was incorporated into the community patch project, it was, as you say, it was a bit more bare bones and it was kind of buggy. So I'm happy that it still saw some development.
I mean, it still has a couple of small issues in it that I'm working on, particularly with getting the AI to revoke its own vassalization. A couple of users have asked me for the ability to, in the trade screen, actually go in and force another player to let go of their vassals. Maybe someday I'll try to work on that. It's a bit complex, because I mean, the thing is with those situations is you have to adapt what the human player wants to what the AI is capable of agreeing with, in the sense that if a certain situation is met in the DLL, is that situation going to make sense every single time? Because if it doesn't, breaks player immersion, and it also becomes an exploit. You know, you have to be careful about that. That was one of the big things with defensive packs early on, is how do we get defensive packs to function and be wanted by the AI in a logical manner without making it easy for the human player to set up or exploit?
Yeah, this is a very comprehensive patch. It seems like very good work.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's a nice hobby. It takes a bit more of my time than I expected it would. Of course, that's the case with any hobby, I would guess.
So is it ever going to see the Steam Workshop?
Probably not the community balance patch itself, because there's so many incompatibilities with it. But the community patch, right, I think, definitely will, because it's fairly straightforward. It's just load this in, don't have any other DLLs, and you're good to go.
Yeah, straightforward
UI for it. For example, one thing that a lot of users have said is just such a should have been in the base game element is when you promise with an AI not to expand near their borders or not to settle near them or buy tiles or whatever in the base game, there's no way to track that promise. And so you don't know how long you have left on that promise. You don't know when it expires until it does, until it says it's expired now. And so I added in a bunch of code to make it so that in the Diplo panel on the right side, when you hover over the sieve's opinion of you, it shows you the number of turns you have left until that promise expires. And that's one of those things that it's simple, but it does require a UI element, which means that any other mod that modifies the Diplo list Lua will then conflict with that one. So you have to.
Right, yeah. I was going to ask, are there any other sort of common conflicts that would appear with any other non-DLL mods out there? So just making a note that when it does get released to the Steam Workshop, we're definitely going to have to go through all of our sieves and see if there are.
Yeah, the biggest thing to look at is just the Lua, and that's going to be the UI elements. Right now I'm managing, I guess there'd be four different sets of UI for each version. In fact, what I've thought about doing is just releasing the community patch and then releasing the UI as a separate element in the workshop so that users will be very clear to understand that including this UI element will cause overlap with other mods.
That's fantastic.
So wonder what I'd have to change about the CPP to get it into Anno Domini. I think quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, like, the community patch is fairly modular, and, you know, JFD uses it as the base for most of his mods, and a couple of other users do as well. But the CPP, I think at this point, qualifies as an overhaul in and of itself.
Yeah, pretty much.
A couple of users on the forums are now building mods of the CBP. And I think once it stabilizes and development begins to slow, again, I'm going to focus so much more on either going a modular route, as Jet mentioned, or trying to make it a base that then other mods can be built on.
I can imagine a lot of people would want the reworked tech tree, but they wouldn't want the reworked leaders because they kind of like them and learning. A lot of Civ 5 is essentially learning what everything does. And with a massive, massive overhaul, there's so much learning to do to develop your strategies. I mean, there's a lot of people that love the whole sort of learning process, but there's a lot of people who just want to know all the particular authority in front of them.
Yeah, and that's been a tough hill to climb with the CBP is reminding users that started up that this is, at this point, a new enough experience that you really need to step back and don't approach it with the same kind of logic as Civ 5, as the vanilla Civ. One of the biggest examples of that is the happiness. So in vanilla Civ, it's just one citizen equals one unhappiness. And in the CBP, the model is based on a global median of yields based on city defense, based on culture, based on gold, and based on science. Those are the key elements that if your city is large but lagging behind in science or lagging behind in gold compared to that global average, your citizens are going to become unhappy. And that unhappiness changes based on just how far below the global average you are.
That must be tough on deity and higher levels.
Well, the advantage of that is that the further along in the tech tree you are, the higher a percentage modifier is added to that value. So if a civ leaps forward a couple of techs ahead, they're going to need slightly more on their global average than a player that's behind. So it does kind of hurt human players a bit. But I haven't actually noticed that big of a difference because the median measures itself out pretty well. You really do have to step back and think, okay, this is a different game. This is a new way to think. And one of the things that it's done, though, this whole process, is we've really tried to break down the tall versus wide debate that rages on, I believe it's still going on to this day, in Civ, and make that a non-issue. And just make it you can expand until you can stop expanding. And that's not to say that wide is the best strategy, but your cities, based on how well you're managing them, will essentially dictate, based on those global averages, where your happiness is going to cap out at.
As it should be, yeah.
That kind of reminds me of Civ 1 days, where you could just expand and expand. Because, I mean, when I played Civ 1 and 2, I never knew this concept of tall versus wide. I would just build a big empire and have as many tall cities as possible. I would just do both. And also the complaining about poverty and taxes, that's really a good detail there. Make the game more enriching.
Yeah, it makes them feel a bit more alive, not alive, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they feel a bit more dynamic because in one turn, they could be complaining of illiteracy and poverty. There's also features such as if enough city tiles around the city are pillaged, they'll complain about burning tiles around their home. They're like, you know, guys, there's farms outside our village are on fire. So they'll complain about that. They'll complain about being disconnected. So if you're not tied up via a road or via a trade route to your capital, they'll complain about that. So,
and I assume there's also religious tension and stuff like that.
Right. So religious tension works so that if you have a majority religion in a city, if there's enough of a population that is not of that majority religion, the majority people want more converted people in their city. So they'll complain about that. And that leads to unhappiness as well.
Is there some sort of overview where you can basically see all these different statistics about each city or something like that? Because I can imagine it might be a bit difficult for new users to kind of comprehend, okay, my poverty is okay, my literacy is okay, and all of my cities aren't pillaged, I don't have pillaged tiles around there, but what exactly is causing everything so I can improve my happiness?
Yeah, that's been a big task, is getting the UI to reflect these changes. If you hover over a city banner, it shows you every source of unhappiness you have. And it's done in cute little quotes. It'll be like, we are poor, or we don't know how to read, or whatever. And it'll tell you how many people are complaining about that in a city. And then you can dive into the city view to get actual numbers.
Such a major change, but it feels so needed, essentially.
Yeah, it sounds so good, and I really want to try CBP, but at the same time, I really want to disable a lot of stuff from it.
Yeah, I think that, like I said, I think one of the goals in the long term is to make it more modular. To give you an idea, the most recent big addition to the CBP was corporations, adding in corporations. That was one of my favorite elements from Civ 4 in the late game, really spiced up the late game corporations. And I wanted to bring that experience into Civ 5, but I was trying to figure out how do I do this, because I didn't want to go the route of building a corporate missionary and then using your corporate points to send him to that, because that was the way it worked in Civ 4. And even though you have missionaries in Civ 5, they've kind of abandoned that model for more passive spreading elements. And so what I did was built the corporation model around trade routes, so that if you found a corporation in your capital or wherever, sending trade routes from that city to other cities around the world is what spreads your corporation around. Users, they seem to like it, and it's been a fun addition.
Well, it's logical, to say the least.
Yeah, it fits the logic. And I also added in tenets and ideologies. So if you take freedom, for example, there's a tenet that randomly allows one city in the world near your empire to convert automatically and gain one of your corporate offices. So, you know, it feels a bit more like a passive spread element in that way as well.
I just like how the corporations are essentially a second religion.
Yeah, essentially.
Right, so are there any new features either planned, or are there features that you are kind of proud of in CBP?
Yeah, where to from here?
From here, I had a roadmap. I sat down when this project started, and I was like, all right, this is what I want to try to achieve. I may or may not do it, but this is my list. And in the desire to avoid feature creep, I have not gone beyond that list. And the last thing on that list was corporations, bringing in corporations. So at this point, as far as features are concerned, we are at a complete state. So it's now a matter of getting our balance right and fixing any remaining bugs, which I'm sure, you know, every time you fix a bug, three more appear. But eventually, hopefully, we'll kill that Hydra and get that worked out. One of the biggest things right now that's been really impressive, one of the other contributors, the other half of the project, is Iltoroy. And he's been sort of silently working in the background, like this wizard, on the tactical engine for the AI and rebuilding their tactical knowledge and rebuilding their pathfinding. And I don't want to, you know, overblow it, but it's a pretty distinct difference between the base Brave New World and the community patch in terms of AI behavior at war. The AI is now capable of combined assaults on cities from land and sea. They'll actually use their navies offensively instead of just holding them at home or occasionally sending them out. And they actually know how to organize their army so that they put their melee units in the front and their ranged units in the back, which is a feat. If you've played Brave New World, you know that's not really a thing they do very often. They'll use great generals properly. They know how to build force.
I don't know, it's like there's the dick inside of me just doesn't want them to do that, kind of. Like, I kind of want it to be easier. Like, I kind of want them to suck. I mean, as much as I want the AI to be incompetent, like, this is definitely a certain side of me that loves the incompetence of the AI, because it just makes the head cannon in my head just will spin.
Yeah, it's definitely been an issue. One of the things we've had to do is that I've rewritten the difficulty code, the handicap code for CBP, and I probably also need to work on it a little bit for the CP as well, because the AI is that much more competent when it comes to what to build, where to send their armies, sort of agreements to make, that it has actually brought them up a level in terms of complexity, especially at war. But again, that's one of those issues that I say that, you know, you got to come into the CBP seeing this as a brand new game. You can't import strategies from Brave New World into
the
project. Yeah. If you do, you're going to find yourself feeling frustrated because you'll feel like things that used to work don't work anymore. And that's one of the things we've tried to focus on, is it was very easy in Brave New World to fall into the same pattern.
Why isn't my four-city tradition start working?
Right, and that was sort of the meta, that was the baseline, if you will, for that version of the game. And we've tried to step back from that. You can have all these different strategies that function and work, and neither of them is necessarily better or worse than another. It's just simply a matter of what do you want to try to get and what feels the best in this particular game at that time. As far as things that you asked earlier, what am I most proud of? Probably that's one of the elements that I'm most excited about, is sort of breathing a bit more fresh air into Civ 5, in that there are a lot of different ways to win. And when you lose, or if the AI comes at you, you feel like it was a fair fight, or you feel like the AI knew what it was doing, and the AI knew how to fight against you. And so it didn't feel like you were just walking to victory. It feels like you actually had to slog your way forward to get there.
Yeah.
You wanted it to feel like you were actually fighting another entity that knew what it was doing and knew what you were doing, rather than feeling like you're playing against a player that just suddenly doesn't like you anymore. You knew specifically why this AI was coming at you, why this AI didn't like you. So, for example, getting into aesthetics, the AI now, when it denounces you, it actually tells you why it's denouncing you. So it'll say, I'm denouncing you because your religion is terrible and I hate you.
And friendships.
Yeah, and it also in friendships for the same way. So it'll be like, you're not my friend anymore, you're too much of a warmonger, or this or that. So it feels a bit more dynamic.
Yeah, this was a very welcome fix.
Yeah, it feels a lot less cookie cutter. Like, why didn't they exist in the base game? It seems so glaringly obvious.
All right, so is that it regarding the community patch, or do you have any more questions?
Yeah, is there any sort of last words? Get people to download it?
You know, it's one of those things that if you are looking for a better AI, download just the community patch. If you want a new experience for Civ 5, download the community balance patch. It's still in development, it's still in beta, but it is very, very polished at this point. There's been a lot of people involved in it. And this is something I want to mention too, is that it really is a community project. I mean, I've been the lead on this, but there have been just tens of thousands of posts made on everything from how much should a farm yield to leader abilities. I mean, it really has been a big community effort, because there's so many things that I could never balance on my own, because I'd have to play the game 1,000 times. I would still be playing right now if I needed to do it on my own. But the fact that those players are out there, they're testing things, they're finding bugs for me to fix, that's been a huge, huge part of it. And so I think that if you want to give it a try, I recommend it. It's a lot of fun. I'm not biased. It's a lot of fun.
We're about to talk about those Colonialist Legacies, Sivs.
In recent time, Colonialist Legacies, that's definitely a mouthful that I can't even pronounce sometimes if I'm speaking too fast, as I usually do. Colonialist Legacies, usually pronounced as Colonialist Legacy or Colonial Legacists, or well, I don't know. People just, there's a million different variations of it, and they're always fun to read. Gone through a system where we've decided we have so many different civilizations in production. We probably have around 10, 20 civilizations in production, and all of them have varying levels of completion. So what we decided to do essentially was to dedicate ourselves to, once a week, we got to at least release either a civilization or a major civilization update. So we started off with a Canada update, and we did that. We're kind of lazy. We said that we would start releasing content from week one, but we didn't have one ready. So we just said, okay, we're going to release Canada. We included events and decisions and all these new mod support things. And we revitalized the entire trait of Canada, and they're unique. They're the same, but different, but they have a new spin on it, and everything works very, very nicely now. We also included events and decisions for universal healthcare and race-free immigration. So that's quite nice. But after that, since we've dedicated ourselves to doing the one-week release schedule, we released 3 civilizations in 3 weeks. Which was quite fun and a very, very interesting challenge, and something that we're going to try to keep to. So the first one that we released was the Kulin. They're very cool and stuff. Huh. Great. This is where you add the laugh sound effect in and the applause, Dan. No, they're fun. The Kulin are a civilization that are based around the Melbourne region of Victoria in Australia. We felt that after a while we had done so many different Canadian First Nations, and rightfully so, they're different cultures and creeds that definitely deserve their story to be told. So we decided to focus our efforts more on Australian, Indigenous Australians. So we started off with the Kulin, because there had been some art done from there. Already had created some art back in, probably 2013 or something, back for Hiram. We had Hiram on the modcast, actually, back in the day.
Yes.
And he created a Kulin Alliance civilization, so we decided to update that and revitalize that and make that kind of a pseudo-successor under the Colonius Legacies brand. And it's fun. It's a civilization that founded pretty much around city-states. Their unique trait is whenever a city is founded, they gain influence with nearby city-states. And an open borders treaty provides influence with all city-states that other civilization is already friendly or allied with. So they're kind of very fun to play as, but if you meet the Kulin in-game and you have an open borders treaty with them, friends of my friends become their friends, pretty much. So all of my allied city-states will become their friends as well. So you got to kind of watch out for them. They're a bit sneaky. They also have a Diorite Axeman warrior. They're basically land version of Nows. The Portuguese Nows, how they go to city-states or civilizations across the world and sell exotic goods, they can do that. And they also have a unique artist guild, which can be built in multiple cities. And they gain Possum Cloaks promotion because the unique artist guild is a wallet gurn maker. And the Kulin peoples were very, very well known for making their beautiful possum cloaks, which allowed them to survive in tough parts and climates in Australia and explore around the place. And then the other civilization that we released after that was the Beotuk, and they're just one of the crazy civilizations that we've released. And Colonius Legacy civilizations usually have a knack for being extremely sort of gimmicky and sort of in a sense. There's a lot of weird gimmicks, but the Beotuk are very, very, they kind of fall in line. It takes a few reads to kind of fully understand and comprehend what the civilization is and what it's trying to achieve. But once you realize what it does, it is just one of the coolest civilizations out. Start off with saying that the Beotuk are extinct peoples. They no longer exist. The last Beotuk died probably way more than 100 years ago. They are a culture that is situated on Newfoundland, or Newfoundland, or however you pronounce that. Nirai is going to scold me for pronouncing a Canadian province wrong. But regardless, the Beotuk are an offshoot of the Wabanaki or the Algonquin peoples that founded themselves on Newfoundland and have created very, very interesting culture because they actually encountered the Norse explorers and the Vikings. Their unique ability is all about antiquity sites. And instead of antiquity sites being available at archaeology, the Beotuk are able to find antiquity sites from the beginning of the game. So what we had to do is we had to unpack the archaeology code and rebuild it from the ground up and just essentially say that whenever the game says that an archaeology site should be spawned, the Beotuk will see that before anybody else. What happens is if they settle themselves near an antiquity site, if they work it, they gain 2 production and 1 science. So overall, this was a very, very fun civilization to design because you had to include elements from little we know of them, but also from the Norse epics. Their unique unit is crazy. They're a demon's head, which is a catapult. They're unlocked at masonry. They have limited ammunition. They're a catapult that doesn't need to set up, that reloads over time and faster if you're in on stone or stone resource or in forests. And when they're out of ammunition, they become a spearman. That's not even the craziest part of the civilization as well, because then you have these mythic emblems, which are lighthouse replacements, and there's 6 different variants based on different criteria that you can get. So if you have a pantheon, you can get a certain variant of the mythic emblem, or if you have a wonder in the city, or if your city is demanding a sea resource for a Wheel of the King Day, then you can get a different version of the mythic emblem lighthouse. And there's just so much stuff that involved in this civilization that it kind of blows your mind.
So what was the other new civ that you created?
The civilization that we had created pretty much exclusively for the Battle Royale. We had an idea that we wanted to create a Northern Australian civilization, but we kind of looked at the Battle Royale and everyone was complaining about Australia, their way of domination throughout the Pacific Ocean, their grand navy and the fact that they're overpowered, that they once they reach a critical mass, because in the original Battle Royale, they didn't declare war on anyone for a very long time, but what they did was they turtled up in a magnificent way where they just filled up the entire continent with the Australian version of the Great War Infantry unit, the Digger, and then they reached critical mass and they declared war in Indonesia, and within like 3 or 4 turns, they had completely overrun their neighboring civilization. So we kind of needed to nerf them somewhat. So we looked at whereabouts on the Australian continent we could place a civilization. And we thought, okay, top left-hand corner, that could provide a good yin-yang sort of, you know, settling pattern for the Australians. Started figuring out what we could do with Kimberley. They are indeed one of the only places in Australia where the Indigenous people actually had a rebellion against the explorers and the colonists of their land. They're a civilization that's essentially based on trade, because they were a massive trade hub as well. They were kind of like the middleman traders, much like the Cree. But they're also slightly militaristic, which is something you won't find in most Australian Aboriginal civilizations, which are most likely to be released.
But it was suitable for the Battle Royale, right?
Oh, absolutely. Much applauded and much welcome ingredient to the Battle Royale. I think the next one, and we've got a couple in the works, Malaysia, which is very, very close to release, which has some very, very cool attributes. They have a unique improvement that can only be built on coastal water tiles, but we're also releasing Cuba very, very soon. And they are just hilariously fun. Cuba is probably the most fun civilization that we have created in a while. And even though we created the Biotope just really recently, the Cuba is just hilariously fun. They're all about inspiring revolutions all around the world with your spies. And it's such a fun mechanic. And I'm not sure if I can reveal too much, but what I can say is that you'll need basically a little wiki guide on the side to kind of coach you through how to inspire revolutions all around the world. If they have more revolutionary fervor points than they do happiness in that particular city, then they have barbarian rebels spawn around the city. And one of your unique units can go recruit those rebels to your own side. So Viva la Revolution.
Does it have tropical music?
Oh, absolutely.
You consider doing a fantasy draft or like a fantasy style bracketing system for the Battle Royale, giving out prizes to people that... Well, you could do a set of system where at the beginning of the game, you have a bracket, and then users can set up who they think is going to win and then have a prize at the end for whoever actually was right.
That's actually a very, very good idea. I know that the Battle Royale has some extremely weird systems, like there's a stock exchange where people predict who's going to win and they buy and sell stocks, and that's just extremely weird and comprehensive. And that's also based on all the InfoAddict statistics as well. So I released the InfoAddict statistics from like the database file, and somebody makes that into a completely comprehensive looking list where you can search through everything, and that affects the stock prices of these different stocks.
Oh.
And there's also like a civilization rap battle royale.
Oh, people and their free time.
I mean, we can't say much, but yeah. That's impressive. A stock system. Okay. So,
yeah,
never mind.
I mentioned that.
Forget my idea. That's much, much more over the top than I was thinking. So, yeah.
Kind of surreal seeing it. They were talking about it at Fraxicon, which is interesting. I haven't actually listened to it, but also they had a radio spot on NPR as well, which is interesting about the Battle Royale.
Calling today in North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLLY. In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288-POLLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com. For more information on Modcast, our sibling shows Polycast, Revcast, Civcast and Turncast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
I think she's actually really popular. She's one of those YouTube money people just rolling in it.
Living the life.
Absolutely. There's so many arguments, and it's such a mixed bag. There's like legitimately just so many people coming from so many different angles. You'd be hard-pressed to find everyone has a consistent, agreeable position on whether or not paid mods should exist in any shape or form. Some people are very staunchly anti-paid mods because mods are purely, strictly free, and some people are for it because they kind of want to see the content creator get reimbursed for their hard time and effort.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, as we've said before, with paid mods comes almost like a sense of ownership, doesn't it? And a sense that you can really input and change what's happening there and complain, etc.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know,
I think we had a whole modcast dedicated to it. It was quite interesting.
Let's not have another one.
So at what point in the future, what would I have to do to get you to run at least the community patch in a Battle Royale?
Oh, just do it. Just ask.
Okay.
Just like, I reckon the Royal Mark III will definitely include patch. Probably not the balance patch.
No, yeah, I would love to see just the AI performance changing.
But interesting to gauge the community reaction, because a part of the charm behind the Battle Royale is the incompetence of the AI.
Yeah.
Just like,
I by no means saying the AI is not incompetent anymore. The AI still shows that it's very much.
No. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Out of selfish reasons, I would like to see one of the Battle Royals sometime in the future use both the community patch and things like the Enlightenment era for extra units at least, because you can see those.
What I really want to use is a completely new set of civs. So 61 new civilizations that haven't been in any of the previous battle royales.
Oh yeah, definitely. Just to be fresh.
To say that a modder's task is done is just fallacy, isn't it? Because there's always something you can tweak, something that you can add, etc. Once I've added all the civs back, we're talking over 100 civs that's in the game. So there's a battle royale right there, waiting to happen. The world of Anno Domini. So yeah, sure. That was Modcast 61 then. It starred following
Jan Boruta,
T. Van Golen,
Officer
Gazebo,
and of course me, Rob R8XFT.
So what would we put on our gravestones one day?
Well, see, the thing is on the gravestones, I think the gravestone will never be finished. That's the point. You know, people will come back, you know, after a while and just add something else on, you know. And perhaps it will say this gravestone is compatible with Cities in Development.
It'll be the Sagrada Familia of gravestones. It's constantly adding things to it.
And you have addresses of gravestones of other mothers you can visit.
You also have a QR code etched on your gravestone you can take a picture of and go to
the QR code and just links to my life's work.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
The future of death is here.
Hello.
Hey, Alpha Shark.
Hello there. We're about to record. Are you recording? Hello? Alpha Shard? You hear me?
Is it me you're looking for?
Hello?
It's the obvious joke.
Alpha Shard, can you hear me?
Ground control to Major Tom.
Very good,
I can hardly hear you, mate.
Can't hear me?
It's very quiet.
High volume.
Settings.
I think there was like a SurveyMonkey poll out that Directus released asking what people really prioritized.
Yeah, I answered that. I mentioned the whole modding stuff, but I think they were primarily asking because of their marketing.
I just put on my survey, they asked what's the best thing about Civ 5, and I just put that mod, Anno Domini.
I'm looking at this and I'm going like, I really need to set up a game with all of JFD's cultural diversity and events and decisions and cities and development and piety and prestige and sovereignty and
see when it crashes.
You see when it crashes, but it would be an absolute one, like a masterpiece if it, everything worked together and have that with the Enlightenment era and see if it still resembles anything like Civ 5.
I think the only leader that has not had their unique ability changed in the CBP is Poland, because they were the top tier of Brave New World, and so one of our goals was to make every civilization at that same level.
But Poland should be changed. It's boring as fuck, sorry.
If you have any ideas for it, absolutely bring them forward.
I just actually have one question, and Dan can re-edit this back in to make sure it was before. But quickly...
That's a very difficult issue, is how do you design an interesting civilization that has a unique ability that's as fun to be around as it is to do? And it's like being that person at the party that you think you're the life of the party, but really you're just really loud and kind of annoying. You know, like, how do you deal with that? As an American, I feel like the most appropriate way to deal with Manifest Destiny is just be like, actually, I have enough money. I'm just going to take that right there. Thank you.
Okay, I need to edit that into Canada's code, so it'll turn into Canifest Destiny.
Yeah.
Actually, with that, we have every single thing about the Biotaka are essentially, I sang essentially a lot. Edit that out, Dan. Thanks. Or not. I think that'd be so cool, just to have like some Native American chanting combined with some modern electro music and have that you enter the atomic era or something. That'd be great.
Dub's a version of Down Under should be played when you win by sending a spaceship.
I want this now. I think I'm going to do this. We love putting Easter eggs in all of our mods. For example, all the Australian spies are just named after famous Australian actors. So we have Russell Crowe and Hugh Jackman as spies.
I assume you have a Mr. X in there somewhere, right?
Oh, actually, for the Mexico mod, we have Dora la Exploradora. So we have Dora as a spy for the Mexicans.
Jeff, how do you feel being called Pope Gazebo by JFD?
You know, it works. I've made it so that barbarians in the CBP, when they get near a city, they can pillage and take gold and stuff like that from the city. And they take damage relative to the amount they steal, so that barbarians don't just linger around and do stuff. Users on the forum have come to referring to barbarian horsemen as meteors of meat, because they come out of the edge of your field of view of your fog of war, smash into a city, die instantly, and steal like 40 or 50 food. So they're just meteors of meat that smash into a city and do some damage. You don't even know why. Where did it come from?
Anno Domini at the moment. A new version out shortly and then working over it. But once we finish this, I'm about to raid CPP again just to see what I've missed. So I've noticed that there's a couple of diplomat units there that I could really use as great adventurers, etc.
Rob, you're a Viking. You're raiding Pope Gazebo's monastery in search of valuables.
I am indeed. Well, this is it. I
mean, just make sure you don't turn into a meat meteor.
Yeah.
We digress. Shall we get on with the modcast itself?
Sure thing.
Record date?
December 12th, 2015.
Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips. Copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.